Hello and welcome to Full Access Hoops, an OTG basketball podcast. This is our Sunday edition of the pod, which means Jay Christian is on the show once again with me. We'll be doing a bunch of rambling, a bunch of probably me getting yelled at and belittled for some of the takes I've had on Twitter, in which Jay has been very, very against. Jay, how's it going?
Corey, hey man, I leave you alone for a week. We try to, I let you try to have a day at the beach last Sunday, and we just kind of take a little time off in the slow period. And holy cow, man, just shooting your shot on Twitter. Yeah, so I'm happy to reconnect with you and be the adult in the room, I guess.
So I guess we'll start from like the first topic, which I actually got like a lot of mixed scrutiny about, was the LeBron James at his son's AAU game.
Right.
So to those who haven't seen, which I'm sure everyone has seen at this point, LeBron was doing pregame dunks before the game, which I'm perfectly fine with. I have no problem with LeBron on the court doing pregame dunks for everybody there. Kind of, you know, it's a treat. You know, not only are you getting to see his son play, but you're also getting to see LeBron James in action. It's a cool experience for the kids who are on the floor. Like, I'm completely cool with that. Game starts, whoever won the game, still don't know. There was an alley-oop play in which Bronny's team basically just had the entire gym erupt. LeBron runs onto the court in excitement, loses a shoe, runs back for the shoe. Is really just having a great old time. And then this is when I became, I guess, anti-fun Corey. But I just don't believe fans, spectators, parents, no matter who you are, belong on the court during a live game. That's just my perspective on it. I get it's LeBron James, and I've even said that if it's LeBron James and we're just going to say because it's LeBron and he's done so much and everything else that he gets a pass, I can learn to accept that. But that's just not something that I'm accustomed to over having fans, parents, and spectators put themselves onto the court in a live game. That was the only part of that which I didn't like. I love the emotion, him bugging out, but you can do that from the sideline is my perspective. Go ahead, Jay. Let it rip.
So I will say, in all fairness, so the first clip that I saw was the dunking and layup line. And to be fair, the cottage industry of, oh my God, LeBron James, you know, clutching pearls, and the denigration of American society and civilization as we know it. The cottage industry to that is that, which is, I mean, let's just call it out. Clay Travis, everyone on Fox Sports, Skip Bayless. I didn't hear Cowherd, but I assume he probably had a similar take. I could be wrong. Whitlock, of course, who's solely there for the clicks. That was their reaction off the layup line. So I will say that I went in guns blazing off that reaction. And then I saw that first, the LeBron, the layup line, before I saw the alley-oop where he reacted on the court. So I will say, as a bit of context, layup line first, absolutely no problem with that, because it is really, if I was a 14, 15-year-old kid and LeBron was in my layup line, I would be stoked. So that's that part. That's absolutely, in my opinion, as a former AAU player, former D1 basketball player, having traveled across the country with a very average AAU team. I mean, there's literally thousands of them every summer. So we by no means were the LeBron James or Bronny James AAU team in terms of talent or notoriety. But we did run into those teams sometimes. And all that to say, in the layup line, in that instance, I, being honest, I think I could tell quite easily who played and who didn't play by the reaction. It's just one of those things, right? You can tell folks, you know, and I hate sort of play the game guy, quote unquote, in sports talk, but that's one of those things in my very critical eye opinion where it's like, okay, this guy's never fucking dunked a basketball or played, because he's getting his feelings about that. The court thing's a little different. And this is where I'm probably more on your side. When I saw that, I was like, all right, Corey, that's not crazy. Especially when your take was, I don't mind the emotion. He probably just shouldn't be on the court. I would actually hear the
which
argument.
Which I feel like is what a lot of people ignored from my tweet, because I had a lot of people calling me racist. And I was like, a lot of people were like, if that was Tom Brady, you wouldn't care. And I'm like, no, like, you're missing the point. Like, I literally don't care about the emotion. It's just the fact that he's on
right,
the court.
Right. Well, and so that's funny, too, because, wait, So people referred to you?
Oh yeah, no, no. I had a handful of people call me racist because they were saying that I only care because it was LeBron and he's black and not because he's and I was like, no, like it could be Tom Brady who I despise and I would still say it's not okay.
I gotta say that that's strong. And
that's Twitter. That's Twitter for you.
So that's Twitter.
You get a full spectrum of opinions and takes.
Right. And in full transparency, and I'm not going to, you know, because this happens, I'm not going to cape for you in that way in the sense that, you know, we've done the pods and things together, but we've never met in person. I have no idea what you're like in your personal life outside of this. So I can't even say, oh, man, you guys don't know Corey. Da, da, da. But I still don't think that. I mean, I think that's a leap. I think it's fair to say that's jumping a few levels to say that, hey, man, maybe this grown ass man shouldn't be on the court. I'm kind of with you. I'm like, I don't think anybody's daddy should be out there. Yeah. Now it's so two things. One, I think it's cool because it's LeBron, like it's neat. But I will say also in playing experiences, in playing summer leagues and in playing AAU basketball, gets pretty fucking nuts. I mean, I will say that. So put it this way, I've seen that in summer league games. Not so much in AAU. Depends on the tournament, right? Because there's AAU nationals, there's BCI nationals. The national tournament's not so much when all the college coaches are there. But any Tom, Dick, and Harry can run a tournament in the summer for AAU. And I have been at little sort of tournaments where that goes on, right? So that's not – so that reaction's not crazy from LeBron. I've definitely seen that, not even exaggerating. But at the same time, to your point, I could see where someone being like, hey, man, that was a little much. That was a little extra. Why don't you just stay over here?
Well, I mean, they also had to call a timeout because he was on the court.
Right, right.
And you know, and I know, and I saw a lot of people say, well, the team didn't mind. Look how happy they were that LeBron was celebrating. And my only argument to that is, how do you think the opposing team feels? You think they were loving it? They just got alley-oop dunked on, and then LeBron's on the court jumping up and down, celebrating on something that happened against them. Like, I get that's a little bit of probably just being a little bit too sensitive, but it wasn't like that personal experience of him running onto the court celebrating. I don't think all the kids loved the fact that he was on the court because the team that just got, you know, the alley-oop dunk down, I don't think they were feeling great about themselves.
Now, I will say this. Two things on that. One, I think that's absolutely fair. And I think it's a great point. And because one, I would say, well, okay, to the people that say, well, they didn't mind it, my thought is, well, what are they supposed to say, right? It's LeBron James, and you're playing basketball, right? Like if you're at a clarinet recital and LeBron James runs out, you're like, get the hell out of here, because LeBron James didn't play the clarinet. But if you're playing basketball and LeBron James is there, you're not going to say shit, because it's LeBron James, right? You know what I mean? Either at a fandom or whatever, it's LeBron. And then two, I will use the argument, and this is, you know, what people like to say all the time when you see some fucked up shit on a video. We don't know what happened before or after. I will use that argument here in a very lighthearted way. We don't know, and I don't, there may be a video of this. I didn't see a video where maybe after the game, LeBron went and shook every hand of every kid on the opposing team, which is a freaking moment, by the way.
Yeah.
On the court or not. Like if you're 14 and LeBron comes and you say, hey, man, hell of a game. And LeBron being the basketball, you know, Will Hunting that he is, the savant that he is, he could probably go to a kid and say, you know, in the second quarter, you set the screen. It was a great pick and roll. And you just, Laker cut to the basket. And that was fantastic, man. Keep that up. I can't wait to see. If you get that moment after the game, if you're an opposing player, then, yeah, I don't give a shit about LeBron being on the court, you know, during the game. So I don't know if that happened or not, because if it did.
I know it has happened because I remember reading a story about some kid playing against Bronny's team lost. And LeBron approached him after the game and said, I hope you're in the league and I'm still playing.
And that kid will never forget that.
Right, exactly. That kid, like, broke down in tears, actually, apparently, after he was told that. But, like, you know, sure. So that's obviously LeBron seeing someone on an opposing team and noticing talent and picking it out. Does he do that to everybody? I'm not sure. Right. But like you said, we don't know what happened before or after that moment. But if LeBron's doing that already to a point, I'm sure he acknowledges the opposing team. I'm sure
of course
he realizes that him being at one of those events is bigger than basketball.
But, you know, it's interesting, too. So And this is a deep cut, and I'm you know, guilty of doing this on this pod. I'm trying to get better at it in 2019. But so, you know, ESPN, they had the 30 for 30. It was about the little league team that beat Taipei in the 80s. They had this kid. It was called like Little Big Men or something like that. It was about a team from, I think, from Washington State. And they had a kid Cody something. He's like bigger than the rest of the kids. You know, typical Little League, right? He's like 11, mm-hmm. but he looks 13. And they beat Taipei, who never lost, I don't think, in Little League. And they just, this is the biggest thing in like 1982, 83. And they talk about, like, after that win, they'd go play places all the time. And people wanted to beat this team. And I forget the team's name. And they wanted to beat Cody. And there's, you know, you got grown men acting inappropriately because they just want to crush this 12-year-old kid. I feel like LeBron gives that team a little bit of swagger, in a sense, his son's team, because that's what they run up against. I've seen LeBron talk to those kids. They've had footage of him talking to him at halftime, pregame, postgame. And he's basically like, look, man, you got to step on next, because these kids are trying to beat you so they can say, we beat Bronny James, we beat, you know, Zaire Wade, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, this is kind of taking it off a path a little bit, but, you know, I don't necessarily mind LeBron infusing those kids with the swagger, because I will take it here, because, you know, and I'm sorry if you know, people think you're racist, but I will take a race thing here, because there's something about, even though they're affluent kids by and large, most part, especially Bronny, they still are boys of color, right? And there's something about infusing young men of color with that swagger to deal with the microaggressions that is being in this country. And I mean, I know this isn't like a social commentary pod or anything like that, but like when LeBron's like, hey, you know, you guys, you know, walk the walk and talk the talk, because this world will beat you down if you don't do it otherwise. Like, everyone wants their black stars to be humble, and these are just kids. I get it. But you know, there's, I think Jim Brown said this one time about Muhammad Ali, America didn't love Muhammad Ali until he couldn't talk anymore. Right. So, people don't like the swagger sometimes, necessarily. Not you. Let's get everybody clear listening. Corey's fine. Corey's one of the good ones, right? But so if he's out there, on the other flip side of it, I get sportsmanship, I get decorum. But on the other side, if he's telling his kids to just be unabashedly, you know, full of swagger and everything like that, I'm cool with that. Now, the argument is, and I'll shut up, I promise, and let you talk, is the kids can be that way, right? There's no need for LeBron to do cartwheels on the court. Right. That's right. Probably the counter to that.
I mean, I think empowering black youth is perfectly fine. Trying to instill confidence in a bunch of young ball players as they try to bring their game to the next level. I mean, I don't think it's crazy to think that LeBron is probably like an assistant coach in a lot of ways to these kids. Right. I think it'd be hard pressed if LeBron isn't trying to make Bronny better and everyone else around Bronny better to a degree. Obviously, he wants to not get too much involved. Maybe he does want to see more of a parent side. But I feel like LeBron offers a lot of advice, because I've seen videos of him grabbing kids and just kind of giving them advice of what they could do differently from things that he sees just watching off the court. So I don't think there's anything wrong with the argument you're making of the, it could be a good thing, for the fact that, you know, there's a lot of, it's a confusing time in the country. Not confusing time. People just suck. There's a lot of people that suck.
Right. No one's confused about what's going on. They just suck. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And if LeBron can use his stature and status to help the next generation of kids as much as he can, and obviously he's got the school he already created, which is a great thing for Cleveland. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But again, like you said at the end of your statement, probably doesn't need to be doing cartwheels on the court and right, celebrating. Right. Like I said, like I honestly have no issue with the emotion. I actually still, like, I loved everything he did. I loved, I was just like, I wish he was off the court doing it, like on the sideline. That was literally my only grudge, which obviously I got a mixed review. But Mad Dog, he retweeted me. So that was kind of cool.
No way.
Yeah.
Nice. What tweets did he retweet? Which one was it?
Literally the one of, I don't believe LeBron should be on the court, but I love the emotion.
Okay. Oh, look at that. Mad Dog, huh? Good for you.
That was kind
of, I did not know that. That is very cool. Man, there, you know, many jackoffs send tweets hoping that Mad Dog will retweet, and you weren't even trying. Look at that.
Yeah, he just stumbled upon me. But so
that's funny.
So where are we concluding on this, that what everything LeBron did was cool, but maybe just don't do it on the court?
I think in this, yes. And I think, is, to me, honestly, and see what you think of this as we wrap it, but I think it's less about LeBron and more of this sort of binary world we live in, where it's either got to be the end of society or it's totally okay and you're borderline racist if you disagree. I think this just highlights in something so innocuous. It's also slow sports time, but the idea of things can't be nuanced. It's either got to be one or the other. It's got to be LeBron is an attention whore like Jason Whitlock seemed to intimate, or it's totally fine and you're, you know, a racist like Corey Waldron if you don't think this is okay. Like, there's room for in between, but apparently not, right? So yeah, it's a bigger commentary on the reaction than the actual action, if that makes sense.
Oh, I think 100%. I mean, this was a story for like 48 hours.
Right, which is 47 hours too long, in my
opinion. Right. I mean, as you mentioned, this is the slow time of the year for especially basketball. You know, we're out of free agency. There's no summer league. There's no camp. We're just this little one-month window where everyone wants to fire off as many hot takes as possible and kind of just divulge in things that necessarily aren't as true as they seem. And we kind of just saw that, and it's a good transition into David Griffin this week. Had some comments about his time as the Cleveland Cavaliers GM, his time working, you know, obviously with and alongside LeBron James, trying to get Cleveland a championship. And some of his words were taking out of context, to which yesterday he came out and clarified some of his answers, because originally he made it sound like having LeBron on your team was absolutely miserable. It was unfun. He hated it. And as he came out and said, it wasn't that he hated LeBron or dealing with LeBron. It was more so the fact that there's just a ton of pressure when you have a guy like LeBron. Your expectation is championship or bust every year.
Right. Right. And that one was weird too. And this one, I think there's probably a little more story here than the, what LeBron does in his private life, with the Suns AAU game. But I thought that was strange too, because, and this is another one where I think there's nuance. I get what Griff was saying, and I think he was from a more sincere place, quite frankly, than Kevin Durant was a few months ago. He's like, nobody wants to play with LeBron. And so, and even Durant, to his credit, Durant was still making toxic, right. And that, and even that, I mean, I think I sincerely believe that Durant and LeBron are cool off the court. And I think he was referring to the environment and not LeBron James himself, right?
Right.
But it was weird. So this is one of those things where I thought Griff, I got what he was trying to say, but I also get from the LeBron camp, from the LeBron posse, right, that where you would take offense to that if you read that, if you looked at that and say, man, I thought we were cool with Griff. What is that about? So I see both sides of that, right? I don't think it was a – but one thing that I'm starting to find, and maybe I was just blinded because I was part of the hive too, but the LeBron hive is pretty strong, man. I used to think it was just Kobe guy, Kobe stands in the country of Kobe stan, but – oh man,
there's certain topics around LeBron James that you can't touch without being destroyed.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially that Cleveland championship run, and anything that kind of throws shade around LeBron for making it more difficult than it already was is right. Like an unspoken rule of you can't do it.
Right. Now, what do you think about Perkins, Kendrick Perkins, who is becoming like the basketball media gadfly overnight. He's the guy, right? Perk is getting all these opportunities, and he's on TV and Twitter. He essentially said, I mean, he caped for LeBron, let's call it what it is, but he also essentially said, you know, Griff, your problem wasn't with LeBron, it was Dan Gilbert. Fair?
I mean, it's probably accurate to a degree, but I don't feel like Griffin was that involved. Like I think he was obviously involved, but I think he honestly had the mentality of, I want to win. I mean, I don't see much of how Gilbert was in the way. You look at what the Cavaliers did in those couple of years, the players they traded for, as much as they could do with the very little flexibility they had of that roster. I don't know how I would say Gilbert was like a real issue during that stretch, in my opinion.
So do you think it was necessary for Griffin to come out like he did? I think when the story first hit, there were, you know, obviously put plants in the media where LeBron's camp had intimated to Griffin, hey, we need you to say something publicly. Do you think that was necessary? Whether or not it was the right thing to do. Do you think he had to do that?
I don't think he had to do it, but I think it also shows, like we mentioned to start off this segment, is that Griffin didn't mean it to come across the way he did, and the fact that he felt like he offended LeBron, I think he was just more than willing to try and rectify the situation.
Yeah, and I think that's right. And I mean, from everything I've seen, and again, I don't know Griff personally or anything like that, obviously, but from what I've seen his professional profile, I mean, he seems like someone who is more above board than that. You know, in other words, he has a great relationship for, by all accounts, with Rich Paul, has a good relationship with LeBron James from every indication. So I think it was more of him not trying to backtrack, but really like, hey, if I've offended you and my words came off a certain way, that was not the intent, right? And
right.
He seems like that kind of guy. He's got that sort of collateral to yeah. do that. But it's interesting, right? It's ironic that this whole storm sort of proves his point, right? You know what I mean? He's like, I can't even say this without people, because LeBron's a Rorschach test, right? If you don't like him, it's like, see, look, LeBron runs the team. He's the GM. Look at this. This is how pissed off David Griffin was. That's why he left. And if you're an apologist or if you're in LeBron camp, you say, well, geez, David Griffin, you know, to go Colonel Jessup on you, I would just rather you said thank you and be on your way, right? Don't, yeah. you know, what the hell?
And I mean, there's a lot of that David Griffin, I mean, conversation where, like, I think, like, I agree with what David Griffin said about it being unfun. Oh, sure. I don't think I could see that being extremely unfun for the fact that you don't have any draft assets ever. You're pretty much playing to get as much win now players as possible. And the entire time you're working, you realize if we don't win a title next year, we're even screwed, you know, the next year following that, because we don't have any assets. We don't have much cap space. So I can understand the pressure of understanding that your window to win is so small with everything considered. LeBron constantly signing those 1 year deals. What happens if we miss out badly and then he leaves? Like, right. and we're even like, there's just, I 100% agree with the aspect of his points in which he said it was just unfun and a very stressful environment to be in. And I think to a degree, you know, he can apologize for it. It's like that because of LeBron James, whether indirectly or directly LeBron's involved in all of that. The fact of the matter is, having a player like LeBron and having someone with so much power, so much stature and everything else, it's like to the point of someone's not going to tell LeBron to get off the court, right? Because right. LeBron James. And that's kind of like in that, let's say, war room. LeBron walks in and goes, yeah, guys, you know, I think we need to trade Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Dwayne Wade. Like, we need to mix this thing up. Like, I think he's, you know, there's plenty of LeBron being an issue as were him not being an issue, if that makes sense.
Right. No, it makes total sense. And I think, I think to be good at that job, and I think is a peek into how Griffin's thinking is, if you're good at that job, then you want the challenge of trying to build a winner, right? And just where LeBron is in his career, where he was at Cleveland 2 or 3 years ago, and where he is now specifically, he's not in build mode, you know, he's not in dynasty mode, right? It's in like, let's win now kind of thing. And if you're worth your salt as a basketball operations or a GM, you know, you want to kind of put the pieces together yourself. You know, as Bill Parcells famously said, you know, they want you to cook the meal, they should let you pick the groceries, right? And I think any GM worth his salt feels that way. But also, to steal a line from Brian Windhorst, who said this once about LeBron, which I think is absolutely true, when he was in Cleveland, you live with that. You do what LeBron wants to do. You make the roster changes. You mortgage your future for now, because when he leaves, when LeBron James leaves, you're never going to get that again in the Cleveland uniform. You do all you can. You leverage your future, because the minute he walks out, that's never happening again in this franchise, ever, right? You're never going to get LeBron James again in the Cleveland uniform. So I get both sides of it. But this world is becoming increasingly binary, and no thing is as nuanced as it should be. So.
So where are we going now? I guess we could talk about some of the 2K ratings.
Let's do that. How good is Kyle Kuzma? Who gives a shit? Like, what is sorry, that was trending yesterday, and I was like, I think Kyle Kuzma, I can make the argument, yeah, you know, if you're feeling high, you're like, maybe Kuzma is really the Robin when you think about it, blah, blah, blah. I could also hear the argument that Kuzma could be, assuming everyone's healthy, the fourth best Laker, right? So,
yeah. Well, did you see some of the players Kuzma was better than?
No, let's hear that list.
All right. So Kuzma's ranked higher than Eric Gordon, Lonzo Ball, Zion Williamson, Jaren Jackson Jr., Derrick Rose, to name a few.
Interesting.
I don't think he's better than Jaren Jackson from Memphis. I think Jaren Jackson from Memphis is really good.
I agree.
I just think I don't understand the love for Kyle Kuzma. Like, for example, I think Jason Tatum's an 85. Is Kuzma really just one thing worse than Tatum? Like, I don't feel like it's that close. Like, I feel like even Eric Gordon being a 78, that feels like wildly disrespectful to me. Derrick Rose as an 80. Is Kyle Kuzma that much better than Derrick Rose? They're like the same player, just one's a forward, one's a guard.
Right.
It's confusing. The 2K ranking system is always kind of confusing. It's one of those, they just kind of spit out these numbers and you're like, oh, well, that's kind of fun.
A couple things, right? One with, I don't mind him. Well, no, I'm not gonna say that. I was gonna say I don't mind him being ahead of Zion just because Zion hadn't played an NBA minute yet, and I'm like, okay. But at the same time, you know, there are rookies that come through where you're like, okay, this guy's clearly better than this other guy, rookie or not. And I just in general, I think this is sort of a narrative one that you know, Kyle Kuzma was drafted later than Lonzo Ball and Brandon Ingram, and so you know the expectations sort of under promise, over deliver with Kyle Kuzma. Not saying he can't play, but he wasn't the number two pick in the draft. You know, no one said anything about hanging his jersey in the rafters when he got drafted, et cetera, et cetera. So the fact that he could play in what was otherwise been sort of disastrous for the Lakers the last 2 years, people are like, oh, there's a bright spot, Kuzma. But he's playing that sort of support role, so he's shining in that. I mean, I think he can play, but yeah, I'm like you. I think the guys you listed, I mean, Eric Gordon has hardware in his trophy case, right? It's sixth man of the year, proven player in the league. I don't think Kuzma's shot is there yet. I mean, I don't think he's, yeah, that was confusing me. The confusing that is debate about where Kuzma is in the rankings. Kind of also speaks to the celebrity of it, right? I mean, Kuzma's, let's just call it what it is. He's active on Twitter and social media. Whenever something LeBron related happens, Kuzma's right there.
He might be the most loved Laker. Like, I don't see many Lakers like ever saying, like, at least LeBron still gets some slander from Laker fans to a degree. Right. But like, I think Kuzma is just like indestructible. I mean, even when he was in trade talks with David, it was like, no, we can't trade Kuzma. Like, you can't put
Kuzma
in the deal. Like, it's just like he's like a fairy tale almost at this point.
Which is weird there. Which is weird, right? I mean,
yeah. He shot like 30% from three last year. Like, we're not even talking about a guy who was like really good last year. He like struggled bad from deep and takes like Carmelo Anthony type of shots.
Right. Yeah. So that was a big one for me because that was literally trending, I think, about Kuzma and his ranking or rating. Any other players that jumped out at you?
I mean, Mike Conley was 87, but that doesn't really, I think it's about right. But then it just brings me back to the point that somehow Kuzma is only three rankings less than Mike Conley, which doesn't seem right. Mm-hmm. I feel like Conley is just a better player. I don't know. I mean, I don't hate it. LeBron being 97, LeBron and Kawhi being tied at 97 seems about right. There's no clear-cut best player in the league. They didn't want to disrespect LeBron. I think Kawhi probably is the best player, though.
Yeah.
Right? Like, maybe that's a good question, Ashley. Is LeBron still the best player in the league, or is there not a best player in the league?
That is a great question. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm going to say it's still LeBron, but the gap is obviously closed. I don't know if I'd say that this time next year, but as of today, like I treat LeBron right now, I'm treating LeBron as going into like Michael Jordan going into that 96-72 win season, right? When after he came back from baseball and he played the last quarter of the NBA season and they got bounced in the playoffs by the Orlando Magic. I feel like LeBron's on that trajectory, right? Like it's a great, healthy league of players that are younger, that are, you know, in the social consciousness, a lot more of basketball fans right now. But I think LeBron, you know, he was injured. was figuring out LA, I think, by his own admission, if he, you know, were ever to talk about it. I don't think he did LA the right way. I mean, it seemed very sort of business transaction-y, right? Like he just kind of showed up and I'm a mercenary. you know, I don't think he did it as much sort of like how he did in Miami and sort of ingratiated himself to South Beach. I think he's buying into the vibe and the culture a little bit more. I think he's probably having a great summer, as indicated by the AAU basketball he's been watching. He's healthy for the first time, or had an offseason for the first time in a long time to just get his body right and not play 100-plus games. And so I'm looking at LeBron the way I looked at Jordan going into that 95-96 season, that I think he's still the best player, I would say. Because I think on balance, I think he's a better player than Kawhi Leonard, right? Like prime LeBron, prime Kawhi, you still say LeBron is better, I think. And so I would say he's better right now, today. Now, if we do that in 2020, it might be a different discussion. But for today, I think the throne, the crown is still his for at least one more season.
I think that's completely fair. I'm probably too much into like the what have you done for me lately. And the Kawhi, what have you done for me lately is just really ringing in my head. Mm-hmm. So like I really just LeBron is never gonna not be in the conversation as long as he's playing at the level. You know, even still last year, like people, you know, we say it was a down year, and yes, the defense is clearly taking a step back. Like I don't care what anyone says, he isn't as laterally quick. He doesn't get back as quick. He can still get the flashy chase down blocks because he is a crazy athlete. But the perimeter defense, which LeBron was a really good perimeter defense, especially in Miami. It's just not to the same level of dominance. He still averaged 27-8-8 or 27-7-7 at the age of 34 in year 16. Like, that's not to scoff at. That's a big deal. Players don't do that. I mean, like you said, he's coming off of actual rest, an actual offseason. Didn't have to worry about grinding out and playing 40 minutes a night through four rounds in the playoffs to then get either a loss or an NBA championship. Like, this is a good thing for LeBron's body overall. You mentioned the 96 Bulls. To me, this kind of reminds me of year, 2012-2013 Kobe, the Dwight Howard, Steve Nash era, where Kobe kind of just dragged that team, and it was almost like the last stretch of greatness we had from Kobe before he ruptured.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
I feel like this year, hopefully not with the same dramatic ending of an injury ending his career and getting hurt, but I feel like this is going to be that type of LeBron year, where it's one where you just see LeBron put everything he has left in the tank on the court, because I don't know how many years of this LeBron we have left. And I know who cares? Maybe don't talk about it as much, or maybe just kind of let things play out. But the fact of the matter is, athletes at this point in their career generally aren't as good as they were in their prime. LeBron has yet to take that major drop off. We saw it defensively, not yet offensively or rebounding wise. Father time catches up to us all. He's the last player left of his draft class. I think it's safe to say that he is at least in the top three, top two. You can say he's the best player. I got no issue with that going into next year. But this feels like it could be the last year of a great LeBron we see. And I don't know if I should, am I just being pessimistic? But that's just how I felt kind of going into this next year.
Pessimistic and a little racist, I'd say, about what no, I'm kidding. that's interesting. I the Kobe Dwight Howard year comparison, I mean, that does paint like a bleaker future, because we all know how that worked out. I'm gonna stay high on it. I think it's I'm going 95-96 Jordan. I think it's fair to think this could probably be the last year of LeBron at peak LeBron.
I mean, like, felt like, you know, not to cut you off, I almost felt like that last year in Cleveland was the last year we see a truly dominant force of LeBron on the court. Because, I mean, I didn't see it last year. But also, he wasn't playing for much, and he wasn't in playoffs. So, like, I just don't know if, you know, even when he said playoff mode's been activated, it was probably a weak playoff mode activated. Like, I just didn't think he was great last year from like a dominant perspective. Not that he wasn't good, but there's a difference between LeBron being the most dominant player on the court and LeBron just being one of the best players out on the court, which is what I felt like he was last year. Was one of the best guys instead of one of the most dominating.
Sure. No, that's fair. So what about this? Okay. And another deep movie cut here. Dark Knight Rises, right? Last year reminded very underrated film. I call it Inception 2 because holy cow, it's the same people. I think that LeBron last year, especially, and you made me think of this with the playoff mode activated. I thought there were times when he was just sort of, I'm going to do it because I'm LeBron and watch me do this, you guys. But I never thought he really, I don't think he was ready. It reminded me of Dark Knight Rises, the first time Bruce Wayne fought Bane, right? He's just telling Alfred, you know what? I fought guys before. I kicked Ra's al Ghul's ass. I'm just going to show up, you know, and you know, sort of throw my jock out there and then it won't be a problem. And then Bane gave him that work, right? Then he had to go to like a Turkish prison and get his back snapped, right? But I felt like that was LeBron last year.
Also,
like
let's just say the ultimate recovery from a back injury, just doing a bunch of push-ups. And it's, that's all you need. If you break your back, just do a ton of push-ups. You'll get better.
Well, here's the thing. The back, and then he went, not even just like, hey, my back is fixed, but like, then I'm also going to like mountain climb. I was like, wow.
Climb this wall.
It's like that. Well, that,
improper nutrition, lack of water, broken back, still climbs. I mean, shout out to Bruce Wayne, ultimate comeback performance.
I don't know if this was Nolan's intent in that movie, but every time he tried with the rope and they did the music and he fell, that was funny every freaking time. I was like, maybe not this week. Maybe he's going and, oh, God, underrated movie. I loved it. And, who's my girl? Who's Catwoman?
Don't do the Anne Hathaway.
Anne Hathaway. Yeah, man. Bad cat suit worked for her. Let's just leave it there. So I think that's LeBron last year. He's like, playoff mode and I do this, watch me do it. And he wasn't ready. I mean, it just wasn't, I don't think,
I'll ask you this question. How much do you believe in the fact that the trainer came out and said that LeBron's groin injury he suffered should have kept him out for 6 months and he got back in 2 months? Do you believe that? Do you think that's accurate? That he was playing the second half of last year still hurt?
Yes, I do. And I think it was a little pride, to be honest. And it's like, hey, I'm in LA. I got to be out, you know, and I got to sort of live up to being a Laker. And call it what it is. LeBron, even though he sort of liberated himself with social media and his critics, he's still got rabbit ears, right? He will never be Kobe in terms of, I don't give a shit what you say. He'll never be Barry Bonds in that respect, right? So the last thing LeBron could do is show up in LA and sit for 6 months, you know, in Kobe's shadow. Like, as great as he is, as much as he's achieved, I don't think LeBron for a second thought he's going to sit out 40 games, right? And then the front office sort of, I didn't say bailed him out, but they came out and said, hey, we're shutting him down, right? Because he couldn't have done that. You know, there's no way he could have done that on his own accord. But yeah, I think the same thing with his hand in the finals a couple of years, right? It's like, we didn't know his broken hand. And then the finals over, he's like, by the way, I was playing with a broken hand, right? That's what his groin too is, right? By the way, my groin wasn't healed. I don't think he was 100%, but I mean, that's also par for the course for LeBron and the messaging around him to be like, I was playing with a torn groin the whole time. I should have been out 3 more months, but I came back. So I just think he'll come back this year. And I think this will be the push where he plays a lot. I mean, maybe even a little more effort on defense. and then next year he'll turn the keys over to Anthony Davis, sort of like Magic and Kareem, you know, circa like 87, 88, when Riley turned to Magic and said, okay, you're the focal point of the offense now. You got to take it over. And Kareem was a hell of a secondary player to have. I mean, LeBron, after this year, if he starts to slip, he'll go automatically into the best supporting player in the history of the NBA, right? If it's Anthony Davis' team next year and LeBron's your two, you know, averaging, you know, 18, 11, and 9 or whatever it is. So
probably still averages 22 on I don't see him ever averaging under 20, even if he does take that passive role.
Which is insane when you think about it, right? Because I don't have the stats in front of me, but I venture to guess, like, if you look at a Magic Johnson MVP season, it's probably something like 19 points a game, probably 12 assists, and 5-6 rebounds. I feel like LeBron could get that in his sleep as a complimentary player.
Yeah.
I can get that breaking a sweat. And that'll be a down year for him, right? Like, if LeBron comes out and he's 22, 12, and 6, I mean, I feel like that's probably a Magic Johnson. I mean, he was MVP 87, 89, and 90. Magic Johnson was. And I'd be curious to see what his stat line was. It was probably low 20s in points, probably high teens in assists, and then, like I say, 5-6 rebounds. But I bet that would be a down year for LeBron. But I'll look that up now.
I pulled it up right now. All right. So what years was the MVP?
87 was his first MVP. 87.
You know, he averaged 23.9 points per game, 12.2 assists, and 6.3 rebounds.
Okay. Yeah, that was his first MVP season. Yep.
Yeah. And in the 88-89, he averaged 22.5 points per game on 12.8 assists and 7.9 rebounds.
And then he was MVP again the following year.
Yeah, and he averaged 22.3, 11.5, and 6.6.
Do you think LeBron could get that stat line next year?
I think LeBron averaging 20, 12, and 8 feels almost more realistic than him averaging less than 8 rebounds. Like, I feel like the rebounds is almost a little bit easier for him, especially if he plays like a small ball 4 with Anthony Davis at the 5, even though I know Davis said he wants to play power forward. I just think they're a better team if LeBron's at the 4. LeBron at the 3, I don't love at this age.
No, I agree with that 100%. Yeah, I think that's... Man, shout out to Magic Johnson, 87, getting it done, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I actually didn't, that's nice. In 83-84, he averaged 17 points per game, 13.1 assists, and 7.3 rebounds. Like, I feel like that could even be age 39 LeBron, like, stat year. 17, yeah. 13, 7.
He just needs guys to knock down shots. He'll get you the ball, right? Yeah, no, that's a – and see, that's interesting because that's still when Kareem was the focal point, right? And you get to, like, 87, 88. That's when Riles is like, look, Magic, you got to be the focal point now and score more.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But.
So, what do we got left? What? Oh, you want to yell at me for some of my takes?
There's only one. Okay. This is one that kind of bothers me. Our good friends at OTG put out a ranking, a poll about the best duos, right? The best combos. And they had the Joker and Jamal Murray. They had Dame Lillard and CJ McCollum. And then Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. And then Westbrook and Harden, sort of like NBA Jams for 2019. And they said, rank these guys. And I took issue with you and a few others, I think. But I feel like we're friends, so it hurt me more when I saw it from you. You had Westbrook and Harden last on that list. Last! And I called you on that, and then you said, well, me and Jack are doing our top 50, and Jack's Australian, so we don't even care what he says. But you and Jack had your top 50 going. You're like, Westbrook's behind all these guys in our top 50 rankings. Table that for a second. I just was confused as to why you had two former MVPs in their prime still ranked as the fourth best duo of those duos that I just named. So please explain yourself.
Also, I started an article yesterday based off of that poll and our interaction. And you know, I don't write much. So really got some inspiration. But I'm doing a top 30 duo list in the NBA. Basically went through all 30 teams. I paired up the best two players in each team. I went through their win shares, their box plus minus, their value over replacement, and their true shooting percentages. The four stats that I care about, I'm not a stat guy. I'm not a huge stat guy. There's like four stats I think matter. Some of you people think 18 of them matter, and you'll go on to a giant analytic rant, and that's cool with me. There's only like five stats I think matter. And win shares, box plus minus, value over replacement, and true shooting percentage are the ones that I think matter. With that said, I did all the calculations for all the duos of 30 teams. And even on the list that I did, James Harden and Russell Westbrook came in sixth among duos. With Murray, Jokic, Gobert, and Mitchell ahead of them. Yes, Lillard and McCollum did come up behind them. But I don't know. The shooting percentage of Harden and Westbrook combined is very bad. And that's mainly because Westbrook is just not a great shooter. When it comes to win shares, though, this is to your credit. So this is your argument. Because, again, these are just stats. You can still have an opinion. Harden and Westbrook have the most win shares of any duo with 22. They had the highest positive box plus minus at plus 18.2. They have the highest value over replacement at 15.5. But they have the second lowest true shooting percentage at 55.
So are you willing to admit here now to the listening public that you are, in fact, a sleeper cell and a plant sent here to undermine the institutions which we hold dear to our hearts?
I think they're a very athletic and fun duo. I just don't know.
So, okay. So then what is, let me ask you this. What is the evaluation for, how are we going to test this out, right? Are we going to go back to stats at the end of the season? Or if the Rockets are in the Western Conference Finals and they send, you know, two of these duos home, then where are we, where's your...
If Harden and Westbrook have success throughout the season into the playoffs, then, you know, it is what it is. And I'm sure the numbers will show that. Because, I mean, again, the numbers of win shares, box plus minus, those are only good if you're good.
Right.
Right. I mean, those numbers are really hard to fake to get a. I mean, even though somehow in this duo list, Mitchell Robinson and Julius Randle are 12th among duos.
Nice.
It's just stupid. But so it is a little bit fluky. But no, generally, if you're winning a lot and you're good together, the numbers are going to show that. And that's what Harden and Westbrook are combined. And I think if they're, let's say they win 54 games in the regular season. Let's say they make it to the second round and they get bounced by the Clippers or the Lakers in six games. Probably still a really good duo.
Right.
And is six really that much shade? Like, think about, I mean, so where do you have Westbrook and Harden would be a better question among the duo.
In that duo? First.
Of that duo. Between Jokic, Murray, Gobert, Mitchell, and Lillard McCollum.
Oh, yeah.
Harden, Westbrook, those guys on the,
first of the four that were on the OTG poll, I have them first. I have them first because yes, I would take them first of all those duos ever listed there. Yes, 100%, no doubt in my mind, full throated. Mm. Of those four that were listed, they were number one. And I don't know any stats. I went to public school.
Stats are nice, but we watch enough basketball that eye test I think matters just as much. And I mean, when you look at name power of that list, Westbrook and Harden combined have the most star power, right?
Yeah.
At least cliche to their names.
Right.
Let me
ask you this. So who's going to get you, okay, to your point with shooting, who's going to get you a bucket between Mitchell and Gobert?
Mitchell's
not, he's not Klay Thompson. I mean, he can score.
I think he's shown that he can get a bucket. And if you're talking about next year when he's got Mike Conley, Bojan Bogdanovic,
you need a bucket like Harden can get a bucket.
I think Mitchell, with enough offensive weapons around him where he isn't drawing double teams, can get you a bucket. Yes.
Oh, see, now you're just talking crazy.
I mean, what are you saying? He just can't get a bucket?
No, can he? I said, can he get one like Harden can get one?
What is a Harden getting a bucket compared to Mitchell getting a bucket? Is it Harden doing are you saying who would I rather have game on the line?
I mean, yeah, we can do that too. I'm just saying, like, okay, now granted,
James Harden in the clutch
sucks. It takes 22 of the 24 seconds of the shot clock. I will give you that. But at the end, with two on the clock, more times than not, Harden converts that to a bucket. I can't say that's the case necessarily for Mitchell. Well, he does. I mean, I think if you say there are parts of his game that need to improve, I think shooting is one of them for Mitchell. I think that's fair.
I think it's definitely fair, but my only argument to that would be he's never had a lot of weapons around him who can create their own shot or can get their own offense, so he's had to face a lot more defensive pressure than most. I mean, was Ricky Rubio going to get you a bucket? Was Joe English really going to get you a bucket? Derek Favors, Kyle Korver, Jonas Jerebko the year they had him, Jay Crowder. Like, no, there's just a lot of pressure on Mitchell, where now that you have a guy like Connolly, Bogdanovic, I think his shooting numbers, if they don't go up this year, then he's got no argument. But I would expect him to go up now that he actually has offensive weapons around him.
That'll be interesting to see. I am curious. Yes, and I will come back to this. We will come back to this during the season. I will put that on the list now. I have the list. No one can see this because this is a podcast. But I'm writing on the list: Donovan Mitchell shooting in question mark. Will it improve? Double question mark. So three question marks on this line. For Donovan Mitchell, well, and then shooting.
And let's not get confused, though. Like, at this point in time, still game on the line, I'd rather have James Harden. I mean, he's an MVP. He's
Yes! You sound like me!
He's one of the top five players in the league. Correct. I have the duo pairing of him and Westbrook isn't low because of Harden. It's low because I'm just not that high on Westbrook.
Well, okay. So that's okay. Let's do it this way then. Okay. Mitchell Gobert.
Mitchell all day.
No. Let's do it this way. Mitchell Gobert. Who's the A? Who's the B?
Oh, that's tough.
Oh, you just had this whole parade for Mitchell. You're gonna take Gobert over Mitchell?
Yeah, I mean, Rudy Gobert's Defensive Player of the Year for a reason. He also has a ridiculous defensive prowess to him, and he isn't terrible offense. You just got to have him around the rim. I would say for all around impact on a game and on the court, Gobert's probably A to Mitchell being B. If we're going by absolute and on the energy and force that he brings on the floor between those two, Gobert's probably higher.
Okay, so then you just said you take Mitchell over Westbrook. We'll put a pin in that. Okay, Jamal Murray, Jokic, who's the A, who's the B?
Jokic is the A, Murray's a clear-cut B. He's not as efficient yet. Jokic, I mean, I think from last year's playoff run, if anything, he's shown that he can perform on the highest level. Yeah, the cardio endurance is a little bit of an issue, probably he's getting slightly better shape, but the passing ability, the clear soft touch around the rim, the ability to extend his range and even hit some threes, I think Jokic is an absolute dominant force if he ever gets in the shape.
Okay, so Jamal Murray or Russell Westbrook?
I mean, offensively, I like Murray better offensively. He can get to the rim, he can get to the line, he can shoot. But him as a playmaker, probably Westbrook. I mean, even though Westbrook does get a lot of, probably half his assists from just like, I'm going to drive and just dish this off to Adams quick, throw it up, please. I would say Westbrook over Murray. Yeah, Westbrook over Murray. Westbrook does a lot of things besides shooting.
And then you're going to say, I'm assuming Harden over Jokic, even though he's MVP candidate. Okay. So in theory, you really actually do have Houston over Denver, based on your own analysis here.
But I think their pairing is better than the pairing of Harden and Westbrook.
I think
Murray, the line between Murray and Westbrook is really close. The drop off between Jokic and Westbrook is significant. And then it's probably a little bit edge of Harden. Stop trying to make this make sense. All right. I think the pairing of Murray and Jokic though is just better than the pairing of Harden and Westbrook. There's no defense for Harden and Westbrook. There's no defense, first off.
Oh, who are they locking down on Denver? Who's what?
That's fair. I mean, I would actually make the argument of if I'm going to rework these duos, and I want to say first off, I definitely put Harden and Westbrook last, more so for the troll purposes, because I don't think Mitchell Gobert is. Are as good of a pairing as maybe like Mitchell and Conley.
Interesting.
But I do think the pairing of Jokic and Murray, like I would probably, like realistically, if I was to redo these right now, I probably would still put Jokic, Murray, Harden, Westbrook, Lillard, McCollum, and then Mitchell Gobert. Because I was really high on Gobert after just looking at his defensive stats.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, if you told me I could have one guy off the Jazz, I would take Gobert as well. I mean, I think he's a stud. I think he's an absolute stud.
I mean,
I like Mitchell's game, but if you told me I could pick one, I'm taking Gobert.
Right, and like I said, in our top 50 ranking that we're doing, I mean, Gobert is, I think he's top 13, whereas Westbrook's top 15. Westbrook didn't get a ton of love from me and Jack after last year's playoff run. And that's another thing. You know, Westbrook's played like shit. The last, I mean, he is a phenomenal player, but like, let's not forget of how absolute shit he was at shooting this year. Like, he was really bad for almost the entire year. In the playoffs, they had the one big game, and he talked a lot of shit against Lillard, and Lillard really did put him in his place.
He did big time. Now, I will say back to something you said earlier. I think the LeBron decline will be gradual down a mound of dirt. I think the Westbrook decline will be steep off the cliff. I think it will go, when it goes, it's going to go quickly, right? So You were right and fair to bring up sort of past playoff experiences, particularly in a league where usually one guy gets some stuff done, and having another guy like George, who had an MVP season this year, even though he's a little banged up towards the end of the year. But more times than not, no matter how bad your team is, you know, having a second guy, even in this era of super teams, nets you a little more playoff success than what Westbrook has had the last three seasons or so. So that is a fair and one of those teams being one of the, you know, teams on the list, two of them actually, with Lillard and McCollum, and then the Utah Jazz with Gobert and Mitchell. Yeah, I think it's fair to say, where has it been, Russ? So that's all fair. That's fair.
I'll give you an inside look to my top 50. And I'm only going to go over the four ranking spots, and you can tell me how you feel about this part of the order. So okay. we're starting at, let's see, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm starting at the 8th best player in the NBA. At 8th, I have Nikola Jokic. 9th, I have Damian Lillard. 10th, I have Kyrie Irving. 11th, I have Rudy Gobert. And 12th, I have Russell Westbrook.
I don't have who's 9?
Lillard, yeah. And then Irving wraps out the top 10. And you could probably even make a case that Gobert's better than Irving at that 10th spot. Then I have Westbrook at 12.
So here's my thing, right? Like, I don't know what to do with Irving because, I mean, Dame is ruthless, right? And he had that OKC in that shot, and he's been sending people home in the playoffs. That's kind of becoming his thing. But
I'm at the point where I can't say any point guard is better than Lillard besides Curry.
But at the same time, I mean, I went to the Blazer game when Golden State was in town. It was a different story when he wouldn't play. You know what I mean? Like, I could hear the argument that Kyrie is better than Lillard. Because he's just, I don't know, man. It's hard to say. It's just, I don't know. I would hear that argument. But I also hear, like, hey, the only point guard you got ahead of Dame is Steph. That makes sense to me, too. I don't really have a qualm with that. But, I mean, Kyrie's still that guy that, I mean, in that 2016 finals.
How about this? I'll broaden the question. Is because I think Lillard and Curry are no doubt top three point guards. Is Irving or Westbrook that third guy?
Yes, Irving, I would say.
You just said yes. I was like, all right, well, that's good.
I think it's hard.
Because the issue is, like, with Irving, you get underrated playmaking.
Right. Underrated defense, I would say.
What?
I'd say underrated defense.
No, 100% underrated defense, underrated playmaking, good scoring with probably above average, average to above average efficiency. Whereas for Westbrook, you're getting steal or bust, rebounds, assists, and inefficient scoring.
You forgot clutch gene.
Is there a clutch gene? Didn't really show it last year. Wow. If we're talking about two years ago. And he was hitting 40-foot jumpers against the Denver Nuggets to secure his 44th triple-double, maybe. I mean, that year was insane. Let me say that, too. 44 triple-double Russell Westbrook that year. I probably watched 40 of those games. And he was an absolute maniac and extremely fun to watch. Like, if there's a peak year for Westbrook, it was probably that year.
Clutch gene for Kyrie.
Okay. All right. Yeah. No, Kyrie's got the clutch gene. You scared me. You said Westbrook.
Oh, no. Yeah, we're
on. Okay, yeah, no, Irving's definitely got the clutch gene.
I think we've got an all-point bulletin for Westbrook's clutch gene right now. We're hoping to, before we have to call off the search this year.
I mean, the one good thing about Westbrook is there's no fear in trying to accomplish the clutch gene scenario, but it just doesn't generally happen.
Right.
All right. I don't. Final thoughts? The NBA is dry right now, huh?
A little bit. I just finished season 3 of Stranger Things.
Never got into that show.
Yeah, it was good. I wasn't into it either. My sister-in-law told me about it, and then I checked it out, and I, of course, binge-watched it, which is a very, just in general, I'm starting to find a very like weird way to enjoy, to consume content, right? Because you start watching on Netflix or Amazon Prime and it's like, well, the next one's starting. Do you want to watch it? It's like, well, shit, I don't have anything to do. Why not? Whereas I should just be like, hey, I'm going to watch it every day, or it comes on, you know, I'll watch it like I do a network show. Like Mondays at 7, I'm going to watch the show and go live my life and not watch 4 episodes in a whole afternoon block of content. But I don't. I get through a season, I'm like, what's next? I can't wait 2 years for another season, which is insane, which is a weird sort of American, like, technology fatty boombalatty way to consume content. I should be living my life, but I'm like, fuck, I gotta see what happens. And it's right here in front of me. Why wouldn't I watch it?
It's actually funny you say that, because I haven't started very many TV shows recently. Like Game of Thrones finished, and then I kind of like chilled, and that Chernobyl series came out, and that was 5 episodes. So I was like, all right, I can totally binge this. But like, I'm almost at the point, and this is the point you touched on, is like, I don't almost even want to start a show unless I know I can binge it.
Right.
Like, I don't, like, if I know I have to watch 1 or 2 episodes a week, or I know that like I just can't like fully get invested in it and like just completely tear down the show, I'm almost reluctant to get involved in it, which is weird, because I used to remember, like, for example, when The Walking Dead first came out, or even The Sopranos the last couple seasons, I used to look forward to that once a week. You sit down on Sunday night with like, your family or friends or whatever, and you watch that show.
Sure.
And now, when having all that access at one point in time, it's almost overwhelming.
Yes, exactly. There's so much content out there. Right. No, 100%. And I don't think it's healthy.
Right? No, it definitely isn't. It's and you always feel like, you know, the Netflix, are you still watching? Like, god damn, like, bastards, been 3 episodes already? Like, shit, yeah, I am. Just keep going.
Which is weird. But yeah, I'm trying to break that habit and actually, you know, take your lead and get out to the beach. It's funny, you were at the beach last week. There's a beach here in Seattle, and it's kind of very nice neighborhood. The Blue Angels were flying over yesterday, so a lot of families were out at the beach. But this beach was definitely sort of like a hipster beach, and I just kind of missed the cut, just in terms of like maybe not whether or not I should have been at that beach. You know, it was just a lot of nice haircuts and coolers and a lot of just ass cheeks. And I'm trying to like,
oh, okay, I was about to say, like, it was the haircuts. That's the first thing that caught your eye, the haircuts.
Right.
Fresh fade for today. Shit.
Trying to be diplomatic. And I was like, oh man, just to be young again. Right. And yeah, you know, to be clear, I'm not a grandpa, but it was still like I just missed the cutoff. I think I'm like maybe 5 years too old to be there.
It's funny that that beach trip, oh, my voice cracked. Apparently I'm too young. The trip that I went to, that was my first time at the beach in 4 years.
So okay.
It was like an experience. And yeah, a lot of women. And yeah. I kept making the joke to my friends. I was like, yeah, I'm so ready to be hurt again. Like, I'm ready. And I also used one of my favorite Roger Dangerfield lines when he was on the Johnny Carson show. Which is a really good pull, by the way, for me right now. Please.
That's strong. That is real strong.
But man, he's sitting there with Johnny Carson, and he's like, I've never been a ladies' man, John. You know, he goes, people are looking for a lifetime of love. Me, just a shallow 30 minutes. That's how I felt at the beach. Not looking for love, just a shallow 30 minutes.
Just a shallow 30 minutes. Nothing. Yeah, totally. Oh, man. But, last thing I guess I'll tell you as we wrap, I think I'm going to pull the trigger and just start following OJ Simpson on Twitter.
You didn't follow him yet.
I was keeping tabs, and every now and then, because he's given like, it's just funny to me. I don't like, what is like, this is just a weird world. Like, I saw that Trump had this tweet the other day about ASAP Rocky's like, get home ASAP, ASAP. And that, I was like, is Trump have bars? What is going on in life right now? So
writing his tweets?
Right. So I saw someone retweet that and said that, you know, he had that in his draft folder for like a week. But it's just surreal right now in life. And so I think I might keep tabs on the juice, especially if Patrick Mahomes didn't have the same season that we're all anticipating. I think we want to have a paper trail in case he
is it. What Twitter is his now? Is it
the real OJ? The one where he says it's the real OJ, the real OJ 32. If you don't see it here,
I didn't say it. Okay.
That's him. Yeah.
He's following 12 people. Who are the lucky people is the first question. Okay, NFL, PGA Tour, SportsCenter, 49ers, Twitter support, Twitter verified.
Twitter support. He's like, hey, man, people keep calling me murderer. You need to suspend them.
Buffalo Bills, USC, the Heisman Trophy. He follows the Heisman. Wants to make sure he knows where it's at all times.
That a kid.
A Sin City attorney, Malcolm Lebrun. Need to have an attorney nearby.
All present at all times, yeah.
And his son, Justin Simpson. Son,
yep. It's funny because I also see that I think it's like Barstool, they retweet him all the time. Barstool's either SC or one of their accounts are always retweeting OJ Simpson. But
Question is, in his golf swing videos, is he actually hitting a golf ball first, or is he just saying start it now?
I think he's saying start it now. That's a good point. I think that's a very good point.
Man's at the tee, takes a swing. He's like, yeah, that's all right. Start recording
and roll it.
Oh, I do love the meme of him in the golf court and he's just like, see ya. And he drives off.
That was strong. I saw that.
It has been an impressive comeback from OJ. Yeah, I think you should follow him, though.
I mean, he probably murdered two people. I'm pretty sure, right? Like, we're not.
I watched the documentary show with Robert. Not Robert. What's his name? Cuba Gooding Jr. was in it.
Oh yeah,
the FX, David Schwimmer was in it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, that was.
He did it.
And he's just got it. And he's got. I was gonna say I would kill for 800,000 followers, but that was unintentionally a poor choice of words. And that wasn't even the joke I was going for, but that landed fine. So it's just weird, man. Cult of personality, cult of celebrity. We don't give it. And he will go out right now. Like if OJ took us out right now, we would be swarming with chicks. Swarming with chicks. Like we would ruin OJ's game by he'd be like, get the fuck out of here. I'm doing something, right? It's weird. Like I get dudes like football guys like, hey, OJ, but it's weird that chicks like go up to him. Right. Like that's strange. Right. I don't know.
More weird social media news. I don't know if you saw. I saw this yesterday. Ted Bundy's daughter, who has stayed hidden her entire life, made one of those TikTok videos pretty much saying I'm Ted Bundy's daughter and just gave out her identity to all of social media.
Yikes.
It was a strange flex, but just that's social media for you. You get some weird things.
Done with this app, man. Email
like,
me.
He literally posted like a 10-second video of her showing like baby pictures with Ted and her mom. And it was just like, huh, interesting.
Holy shit. Yeah, okay. Ted Bundy's, his granddaughter. Ted Bundy's family went into hiding for years and was ruined all because his granddaughter made a TikTok vid. Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hilarious. That is, oh man, that's the most 2019 thing I've ever seen.
Yep. People don't, it's amazing the power phones give people or the courage phones give people to a degree.
That's why when you see the stories, it's like, oh, the data breach and what's going to happen to Facebook. Not a goddamn thing. Cause people are so vain. And like you say, they're posting these videos. Your grandfather's notorious, but you don't care. You want to make this TikTok.
I mean, hell, think about this, that face changing app, you get old if you post that.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Now that it gives Russia complete access. And people are like, yeah, screw it.
Screw it. Right. I want to see what I look like when I'm a grandpa. Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm just like, yeah, I'm going to stay away from that. I know there's probably a giant internet footprint I have already. And Russia can probably get just about anything they want from me already. But I'm just not going to make it any easier. You got to work for it. I'm tough to get.
I mean, this is like turning to the plot of Terminator 2. I don't know what's going to, I mean, Skynet's going to take over and we're going to be like, oh, fuck, what are we going to do?
New Terminator coming out. Did you see that?
I saw it. Linda Hamilton back in the South. And Arnold, it's hard. It's funny because he's a robot, but he's getting old in real life. So they got to like.
they. I wonder what the plot twist is that. Like, yeah, we made an older version of you. So you can feel what age may look like. Ah.
So you look. Last thing, because I know you're going to run, but it's weird to me that they never address the fact that Arnold Schwarzenegger has an accent in all of his movies. He's been in movies for like 40 years and he's always been like, not just like a dude, I'm an immigrant. My dad moved here, whatever. My mom's Austrian. It's always like, hey, my name is Jim or Dutch and I'm just from America. And he's like, considered it a divorce or, it's just like,
I'm thinking of that movie where he's like the local sheriff.
Oh, I was thinking
Johnny Knox is in it, and I can't. It might actually be called like Sheriff. No, it's not called Sheriff.
Sheriff.
Last Stand.
Last Stand. Yeah.
Yeah. And even that, yeah. He's got like the accent. You're like, wow, just where'd you come from?
he's a sheriff in Iowa, but.
That reminds me too. Actually, speaking of like these old 80 action stars, you see, there's another Rambo coming out too.
I did see that. I didn't know. I didn't even know. I didn't even Rambo.
I don't get the plot, but I mean, he's got like tunnels, like all dug out underneath his house in the middle of nowhere, and he's just like been waiting for bloodlusty assassins to come get him. Like, I don't know where we went from the military guy goes into a random town and gets harassed and beat and just kind of snaps to the fact that he's just like a wanted man now.
I didn't know people were looking for Rambo. Yeah, I didn't know John Rambo was still on the run, quite frankly. I mean, I didn't. Yeah, that's weird. And I got to say, I'm a little curious. Yeah. I kind of want to see how this plays out. I mean.
Well, okay, I got final thoughts. I know you're a Marvel man. How excited are you for the next phase of these Marvel movies?
Got to be honest with you. We're scraping the barrel a bit for my knowledge. I have a good friend who's into the comics growing up.
Yeah,
and he sent me some article from, because Keanu Reeves may play some character I've never heard of. And he sent me the article and he's like, hey, what do you think of this? And it's like, I have no opinion on this because I have no idea who these people are. And it's so funny because he'll tell me something from the comic and I'm like, I'm just here for the movies, bro. I don't give shit what happened in the comic.
I'm glad that you're in the same camp I'm in. Like, my buddies are really into it. And he's like, oh, like, the Eternals are coming, dude. And I'm like, dude, I don't know what the fuck that means. what? They're coming? Like, who's coming? He's like, the Eternals. I'm like, I don't know what that means. And he's just like, dude, Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, you know those gold people? He's like, it's part of them. And I'm like, whoa. Like, I just don't mean the movies. Although,
I'm here for the movies.
There is a rumor coming out that they're rebooting Wolverine's character. And... Did you ever see the show Sons of Anarchy?
I did.
You know the biker show?
Yeah.
Well, the main character, the long-haired, blonde-haired guy.
Yeah, I know who that is.
Yeah, Charlie Hunnam. Apparently, he is the likely next Wolverine.
Interesting. Now, with the whole, and we get too much inside baseball, with the whole, like, Sony, Fox thing, so will he be in the universe with the...
Yeah.
Okay.
I believe that's what they're trying to do with like the new Avengers, quote unquote, is they're going to have, obviously, Falcon is now Captain America. Natalie Portman will eventually become the woman Thor. And then you're also going to have, obviously, the Spider-Man, and then you'd have like a new Wolverine, basically just everyone, like a different version of everybody in a lot of ways. Like, I don't think we're going to see Chris Hemsworth throughout this entire like phase. Would be my guess.
But last thing. What are you kind of? I thought for me, Endgame
was the end.
It was the end for the. Like, I feel like we kind of reached. That was a nice bow on like the superhero movies. Like, I'm probably going to see Far From Home, but I'm cool waiting for it to be on Redbox. Like, I didn't feel like a need to go see it at the theater. Like, I mean, I feel like 20 years is a good run for comic book movies. Because, like I say, you're starting to get characters. I have no fucking clue who they are.
Well, especially, like, for me, like, Iron Man was always my favorite, like, superhero. You know, and him being gone, like, he's gone now. Like, even these next, you know, I think they got, like, 20 movies set up for the next, like, 5 years. You know, they're not rebooting this character. Captain America won't ever be Captain America again for at least like 20 years. Like, it's just like, it's almost like you can either be completely cool with your superhero experience at the end of Endgame, or you can move on to this almost like new universe in a lot of ways.
Right.
But I did see Homecoming. Do see it. It was very good, actually. I saw that
Far From Home
weekend. Yeah, it was pretty good. It's like the perfect movie between the end of Endgame and the start of this new phase. It's like the perfect movie to kind of like transition.
Bridge those two. Okay. I'll take that recommendation.
Yeah. It was solid. Tom Holland is a very good Spider-Man.
I agree.
Even though I think Andrew Garfield was the best one, but that's for another.
Ooh. Yeah, please. Let's boot that up next time because that is, oof, that's worse than your duo ranking.
I think I just like the, the romance of that trilogy more than, yeah, but I digress. So final thoughts, Jay, before we get on out of here.
I mean, it's starting to get quiet time in the NBA, which is good. I mean, it lets us all catch our breath from a hectic NBA summer. I would caution all the listeners, I mean, take some of these stories with a grain of salt. Somebody posting something, someone working out in the gym. I mean, let's just get to training camp, folks. I mean, we've had the fun this summer, but let's recharge the collective batteries. Check out some OTG content while you wait for the season to kick off. But, you know, stay away from the talking heads on shit like AAU games and guys shooting at a 24-hour fitness or NBA 2K rankings, even though we talked about it for 25 minutes. Take care of yourself. No binge watching. And let's come back suited and booted for training camp.
Jay, where can the people find you?
I am at jchris206 on Twitter.
Be sure to check him out. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at kwalhoops, K-W-A-L hoops. Be sure to follow the brand on Twitter at Full Access Hoops. And then check out Off the Glass, otgbasketball.com for all the latest up-and-coming content. Had a small brain fart there. We have a ton of hot take marathon we're running right now. We're going wild with hot takes before the season starts, which is all you can really do in August. We have t-shirts, a lot of t-shirts at dsgntree.com/offtheglass. Nets, Kawhi Leonard, OTG Basketball, the Jack Manuel Music Scale for their podcast, Just Ball Things. Be sure to check out also the podcast network that we are a part of, Full Access Hoops. There's also the NBA Outlet, in which I co-host. You have the Brooklyn Buzz, which is a Nets-centric podcast, which is really booming right now. Just Ball Things. There's a Southwest podcast focusing on the Southwest Division as well, officially out now. So be sure to check all of that out. Until next time, peace out, knuckleheads.